Welcome to PodNuts, Computer Repair Podcast, episode number 208. I'm your host, Jeff Hallish. This is our live call-in show for computer repair techs. We answer your questions on running and operating your computer repair business. The call-in number is 1-888-697-0162. Let me introduce the co-host. We have John Dubinsky from the Maven Group. John, how you doing?
Locked and loaded. Look at me. I'm an angel.
Yes, you are. And also joining us today, we have Paco LeBron from Prodigy Techs. How you doing, Paco?
Better than good, better than most.
All right. And Joe, you know, and I meant to ask you this before. I can't remember exactly how to pronounce your name.
Joe Knazovich.
Knazovich. Thank you.
Yeah, there you go.
From Polish Cyber man. On-Site Services. All right. Did I get that right?
Yes, that's right, good.
Good. Okay. So, great group today. We've got a lot to talk about, and we've got another fiery topic that we'll get into in a little bit. But right now, John, why don't you give us a tip that we could learn from?
You said I wasn't going to be first.
I lied.
Right. I thought I'd go a different route this time, and I'd give a shout out to Jerry Bransfield, one of our friends over in Chicago. Paco, I think you know Jerry. Joe, I don't know if you do.
No.
This goes back to CanadaCon. I gave a class on pricing and expenses and everything, and Jerry took that thing to heart. I shouldn't say I gave a class. I was actually led a group because most of the people in the class actually ran with the class. And we talked about, the basics of pricing out your services. But really, one of the things that flushed out are some of the expenses, both monthly expenses and yearly expenses, that a lot of people take for granted. Health insurance, disability insurance. I'd even throw in there the category of other insurance, not to mention your life insurance, your renters or homeowners, all that kind of good stuff. But the cool thing that Jerry did is he put together a spreadsheet. Not that all of us can't just make a spreadsheet and do this ourselves, but the cool thing is it's already done. So what I'm going to do, and I asked Jerry if I could do this, is I'm going to provide that to Jeff so that it'll be in the show notes for anybody to download if they want to. And the great thing about this is it actually, you can take your monthly and yearly expenses, put in your income, your working hours, percentage of billable working hours, so on and so forth, maybe your desired profit goal, and it will break all this down for you. So you can see where you're at, see if you're making money, and it'll just give you a nice little brief, simple picture of what's going on in your business.
Very nice.
Awesome. That's very nice. Cool.
So yeah, shout out, high five to Jerry. Nice work.
Good job, Jerry. Awesome. Good to hear. All right. So let's see. Paco, let's go with you next. What do you got to share with us?
Don't schedule jobs the day of when your city's team for baseball wins the World Series after 108 years. No. It was actually pretty difficult to actually go down there to get some of that stuff going on. No. But the story I have is when you are... So, trying to figure out or try and guide your customers on the better option on repairing something. So I've had a couple clients come in and I've taken a leap of or a bigger initiative on reselling PCs versus just doing repairs. And there's been a lot of older machines well over 5 years that have been coming in the shop and they're very adamant about getting them repaired. And before I kind of just would just let it go and just get it repaired, but I've been kind of pushing back a little bit more now. Especially after attending a conference not too long ago on, you know, the benefits and the repair cost over the lifespan of an actual machine. But now I've been doing where there's like probably, what is it, like two or three of them this past week where, I mean, they were the Pentium, just regular Pentiums, Pentium Ds. I don't even think they have the letters next to them. You know which ones I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
They just classify as Pentium 3 point whatever gigahertz.
Right.
So,
D is a letter, though, just so you know. Go ahead. Sorry. Take it back. So, if you're not here, somebody's got to do it. Sorry.
Well, I was going to play the song of, you know, that was coming home because me returning back to Podness. But anyway, I'm not here nor there. But so essentially, I've been getting them into a lot of Latitudes. ThinkPads. I know I was mentioning before that I was strictly going to Lenovo, but after repairing some of the Latitudes from previous weeks, I've been realizing how sleek they are and why that's John's go-to because they're really nice, simple, and really built well for repairs. So, for the ones that can repair the laptop.
Unless it's a keyboard. It wasn't my fault for crying out loud.
For those that don't know, Jeff broke my laptop. All right, anyways, moving on.
So that's my tip. So essentially my tip for everyone is that if you do get those clients, make sure that you understand that, you know, don't be afraid of pushing back, because it's not about making money for yourself, but it's more you're really helping them in the longer run and giving them a better experience for a lot of things that they're doing in their day-to-day lives with their PCs. So that's my spiel for today.
All right.
Well put.
And Joe, what about you?
Well, I've got one. I had a business customer, brand new business customer, matter of fact. She said she was having some problems with her Chrome, Google Chrome. And I stopped by, I called her and I said, hey, I've got a little bit, I'll stop by. And I stopped by her house. One of the first things I do with any customer, if I've never seen the machine, I'll test the drive, the hard drive. So I ran Crystal Disk, said it was okay. So I worked on it for a little bit, and she says, hey, I've got to use my computer. She uses it for a business. I told her, I said, hey, this thing's getting a little long in the tooth. This is one of those Pavilion DV somethings, about 6-7 years old, you know. Said, you might want to think about getting a new computer, you know, as much as you use it. Anyway, I said, I'll remote in later and finish this up. She had to use her computer. So I remoted in, uninstalled Google Chrome, reinstalled it. And it was late at night. So I texted her and I said, hey, your computer's fixed. So I shut it off, shut it down from remote. I said, it should be good to go. Well, she must have still been up. She goes and turns the computer on. She said, it won't do nothing. She clicked the icons. They wouldn't do nothing. I said, try restarting it. She restarted it. Wouldn't boot up.
Oh.
Oh, my God. Guess what? I go over the next day. The hard drive failed.
Mm. Oh.
And Crystal Disk said it was good. And I had to send, a lot of times when a hard drive fails, you can go in and still access, get the data off of it. She had 60 gig of data on that. And I had to send it into Gilware.
Oh, wow. Right. Okay.
Should she even have a backup?
She told me that. I missed it. I didn't say that. But I asked her, I said, did you have a backup? This is when I was there. She says, yeah, a year ago. So there's a lesson for everybody. If it's a business computer, hook an external to it just in case, maybe, and run a backup. Because I'll tell you, I felt so bad for her. And what's bad is I was the last person to touch the machine.
Sure.
Yeah. And that's always the worst when that scenario happens. So it's like, oh, it's got to be you, you know, and it's, yeah.
Isn't it funny how we touch a machine and for the next 5 years, we own everything that's wrong with it?
Right.
I've been in business for 7 years. That's a first for me. I mean, if you're going to fail, it's going to be a lot longer than that. Within 8 hours, basically.
Now, one of the reasons that I actually will use the diagnostic software on a Dell or HP or whatever is because a lot of times now there's a lot of people have different scenarios with these, but it's always worked out for me. Crystal Disk is fine as a quick, you know, pop up in your face. How many errors is it seeing? But really, I believe it's just pulling stuff off the smart data under Windows.
I think it is. Yeah.
Correct. So it's not doing any surface test. Here's my question in relation to that is, what do you guys do remotely? So you can't run the onboard diags remotely,
right,
on a laptop.
I don't do anything because I'm not there. Whatever happens, happens.
And that's what you were doing, right, Joe?
Yeah, that's correct. I was there. I was in front of the computer when I ran Crystal Disk. I could have used HP's, you know, diagnostics. I did not. Gotcha. And it's just, I thought real quickly, I'm going to tip because, you know, early on, you know, you'd start working on a computer and it would, you know, you think it's a virus, the doggone hard drive was failing, you know? So that's the first thing I usually do when I touch a computer, at least do a quick Crystal Disk or something.
I don't think you did anything wrong. I think you did a triage.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so too. Yeah. Cause I do the same similar thing as well. I usually,
especially if it was just a quick fix.
Right.
Yeah. It wasn't acting up. Just right. Chrome was. Yep.
Now I'll tell you, one of the things you could do if you wanted to, in a remote session, you could actually download software from either Western Digital, C-Tools from Seagate, so on and so forth. And pretty much those two will run pretty much every hard drive that's out there, Toshiba's and Samsung's and all that. and you can boot that up and run it right from Windows and actually test the hard drive out. So it, you could do a short DST or something like that.
But. What are you talking about? Like, what is it? WD? What is it? DLG or something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
Data Lifeguard.
Yep. Nice call.
So,
yeah, that's a good point that...
If you thought there was something going on. But again, like in Joe's case, Google Chrome issue, you don't see anything else. You're sitting in front of the computer. It's one of those things. And it was just timing. It had nothing to do with, and it might have been fine when you even checked it with Crystal Disk, but later on, all of a sudden it said, hey, my time's up. I'm done.
You know, I saw an article. It wasn't too long after that happened. I think it was somebody posted on Facebook. It was one of the backup companies. I'm thinking Backblaze, somebody that keeps track of all their hard drives, failure rates. I can't remember.
Backblaze, yeah.
And it was funny. They said that it was like 28% of the drives that they do a smart test on fail within a week. They tested okay. Something like that. I thought, okay. I was amazed at that. That's a high number.
Yeah. Yep.
You know.
Wow.
They don't make them like they used to.
Beware.
What are you talking about? They make them the same way they used to. That's why they all suck.
I'm just trying to relate with you because you know, they usually say that.
So my tip for the week is if you're using a payment processing service, i.e. like Square, where you can plug the little dongle into your phone, swipe somebody's credit card. I don't take a whole lot of credit cards. Mine is still mostly cash and checks. But when I do take a credit card, it's for the customer's convenience. I had a customer call me up and say, hey, why is my husband's work address attached to this transaction? He got sent my receipt from when I seen you the week before. And I was like, I don't know. I really don't.
Wait,
I
what said, was that?
So basically, she did a transaction with her credit card with me for a payment for a service rendered. And basically her husband at his work address, his work email address, got sent the receipt from Square. Now, I don't like the practice of Square actually sending that out. I understand that they're trying to be judicious and make sure that there's no fraud going on, all that kind of stuff. But if I don't ask you for a receipt from my app right at the transaction point, then I'm already sending them an invoice receipt or whatever. So right. I don't need that extra added thing. And this was like a couple weeks later, Square sending this out. And so she calls me up and says, this really concerns me. I'm worried because he doesn't use his work address for anything. And why do they have it? I don't know. And so I said, hey, you know what? I really don't have an answer. I can only speculate. Let me call Square and find out. So I call Square, come to find out. They let me know that when you use a credit card and if you get emailed a receipt from inside the app, in other words, you know, the customer after signing it types in their email address,
right?
That email is attached to that credit card for the rest of its life unless you unlink it.
So you must have used it on another Square terminal somewhere.
Correct. But here's part of the problem is I had to, even though it wasn't me, it wasn't at my terminal, I had to prove that I did nothing wrong. So what they did was they said, well, they've only done 3 transactions with Square. They had one back in May where this email address got attached. I said, okay, great. I said, can you send my customer that receipt? So maybe it'll jog their memory. And they said, yep, no problem. I gave them the email address. They sent that off, talked to my customer. She talked to her husband, and come to find out, he actually did use his work email one time back in May. And that's why it got attached to the account. So my rule of thumb from now on, when I am doing these transactions using Square or something like that, I am probably not ever going to use the portion where I can send my customer an email receipt, because when they're seeing me, I'm handing them a paper receipt anyways.
Right.
So there's no point in doing it, because once you attach, now when you get the email with the receipt down at the bottom, for people that don't know, if you want to unlink an email account from that particular credit card, there's a thing at the bottom that says not mine or something like that. Anyways, you can click on that link and it unlinks that email address from that credit card. Now, what I did for the customer is I told them to unlink it on their end right away, which they did. So, I mean, Square was really good about it. I don't understand why you were sending a receipt a couple weeks later. I didn't ask for a receipt. You were sending it to this original email address, which now everybody knows is attached to the credit card. So just be aware when you're doing that stuff, or if you're using any other payment processing service, you might run into this issue where people, because everybody listens to the news and different things going on, and they're concerned with getting their identity stolen. You know, I never use this email address, and nobody ever remembers what they did, even though I knew that something had to be done on the customer side. But like John was saying earlier, I'm still held responsible because it was my receipt.
Right.
Even though I didn't send it.
You know, and the bad thing about that is even though you went out of your way and did something you probably didn't have to, you're still the guy that's going to get the negativity.
Yeah.
Whatever that may be. Even though you were the only one that was willing to help. So I don't know how you fix that, but
I just bang my head on my desk and go on. I don't know. I don't have an answer. So I'm throwing that out there so people are aware of this particular payment processing service. If you are doing this, I mean, I've thought in the past of not even taking credit cards, but it's so convenient for certain people. Again, I don't do it a whole lot, but when I do, it's nice to have that little convenience. People feel a little bit better. They can use a credit card to pay for, you know, a higher end service.
Yeah, and that's interesting too, because like you said, because I haven't used Square in years, because I use PayPal here before when I rent credit cards, and they give you the choice on text or email, and they let you put it in. But now after you've used it with your own profile, I've seen the email or number saved. But that brings up a good point that after it's been saved, does that also link into their system? But I don't use any of that anymore because I just literally throw everything in Repair Shopper. So it's create the invoice, click the thing, and I have my digital tablet with the LT connection, run their credit card there, email them the paid invoice.
See,
I use Square, and I mean, it's almost instantaneous. I mean, as soon as you run it and you send the receipt comes through within minutes, usually you said like a week later it came through.
So yes, I didn't ask for the receipt though. So Square was being judicious on their part as far as sending a receipt out to the last known email address they had attached to that credit card.
Yeah.
Now, here's the weird part, though. He has a credit card. She has a credit card, right? We all have joint accounts where we have different names on the credit cards, but it's under the same account, and he is the primary account holder.
Because he has the number, yeah.
So it's kind of like, even though she used hers shouldn't have been attached to this other email address, but somehow that whole account, not just a singular credit card, was attached to the email address that was used.
That makes it even more interesting too. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So a pain in my butt, 45 minutes of my life I'll never get back, but hey, gotta love the business, right?
Yeah, it happens.
I mean, it's great information to learn and all that. I'm just wondering what the big stressor was between the husband and the wife that he got this. What's the big worry that he got the email and she didn't?
Because
it was more of the work email.
Yeah, he said he never used, with the conversation they had before they called me, was he never used his work email address for anything, credit card related or otherwise. So they were just
worried about some sort of fraud.
Correct.
Yep.
Roger that. Okay.
So, I do get that. And so and quite honestly, I wanted to get to the bottom of it. I'm glad we were able to solve it. But these are little things that sometimes you don't know until you're in the middle of it. And everybody wants these bulletproof solutions. And the reality is there's no such thing. Nothing's bulletproof. Things are going to break. You're going to have to fix them. It's what we do. So stop whining, pull up your pants, and go on with your day.
Hey, can I double up on my tip?
Go ahead.
So last week I told everybody that I switched internet service, which has been working out great. And that's all good. But now I went to cancel my Comcast, and I'm month to month.
Oh.
The contract is month to month. And I signed back in 2012 for 3 years, so I know. I mean, I've called, checked on this before. So you cancel, guess what? 2 months. You got to pay for two more months.
You're kidding me.
Even though I'm month to month.
Oh.
What's their thing on that? Retainer or something? Or
it's buried deep down in page 964 of the contract. 2 months.
Yeah, that's funny that you say that, because I was asking about, you know, gig speeds in my area, and they kept on trying to push me toward the 1 terabyte.
Gigabyte.
That 1 terabyte is available in my area. I go, that's not a selling feature. You're capping me. That, why are you even telling me about 1 terabyte cap? I want to know if there's gigabyte speeds in my area.
Paco, don't get me started.
I'm not trying to throw your feathers. I'm just saying that now they're actually pitching this as a sales tactic to switch you off of whatever your plan is now to a 1 terabyte cap. And they're listing all these statistics and whatever versus just answering the question. Do you have gig speeds? That's all I want.
Right.
You know, it's like, no, I don't want to know that you're capping me even more. I understand, you know, like, that, but come on.
Like the provider I'm with now, $50 to install, all the equipment's free month to month. I got gigabit speed now, and I can cancel anytime I want.
Is it gigabit? Is that what you're getting?
Yeah.
Nice.
Up and down?
Yes.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Don't you find it amazing? It takes you 2 months to cancel. I increased my speed the other day with Comcast. They said it'll be within 24 hours. Within, I think, 10 minutes, it was faster.
Yeah. Boy, they can charge you more in a hurry, but they can't get rid of you.
Oh, I'm telling you. Wow.
You can't leave us quite yet.
I just thought that was the case. I never thought of that when I was switching. So I just, maybe somebody else will catch that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I guess you have to pre-plan ahead of time, like a few months. Hey, I'm going to cancel, and just know that you're going to have a couple months to switch over to your next option. But the problem is, John, a lot of times we don't get to that point of basically we need another service that's in place. We don't want our service cut off to where so you're kind of in that limbo. It's like, well, because I've had this before where I've told them, hey, I'm going to cancel your service. I'm moving over to this other service. And okay, that's fine. I was using their email at the time. And this is why I tell everybody, do not ever use your ISP's email. But anyways, and basically what happened was they said, oh no, you'll be able to use it. No problem for another, I don't know, 120 days, 90 days, something like that. Oh, cool. Very cool. So that day I could no longer send or receive emails. When I canceled the service, that was how quick and I'm like going, you've got to be kidding me. And now here's the weird thing. So I'm without them for probably 4 years. No, maybe longer than that, 4 or 5 years. I come back to this area. I'm having a problem with my previous ISP a couple years ago, and I have to move back to Comcast. Okay. What's funny is my email address that I had with Comcast originally, like a bazillion years ago, still had all my emails and crap in it. That thing never went anywhere. It's been sitting dormant for like well over 5-6 years.
Wow.
So
yeah.
Why did they shut me off? I don't know.
Teach you a lesson.
Well, the big thing too with the business account, let's say you did try to manage this and save a penny and you cancel your account, but you had maybe a static/fixed IP address on the WAN side.
Mm.
You know, maybe they get rid of that early and you're not ready. You know, or something like that.
Right.
So, yeah, you're right. So, you know, I just bit the bullet and said, fine. And
yep.
Well, you can't afford to go without internet. Yeah, so, you've got to do it the way you did it.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, let's.
Hey, when we get into today's topic, let's talk about hard drives again. And then let's talk about SpinRite as part of it as well.
Ooh, nice.
Just throw that out there.
All right. So, the topic for today, we'll move on into our next section, is going to be Nuke. And Pave. Dun, now we've had a couple people ask about this in the past, previously, or in the near future. So we decided to basically start talking about things that people want to hear. And this is one of the topics that I've heard over and over again, and it's something we need to talk about. So nuking and paving, from a standpoint of nuking and paving, there's a lot of different philosophies out there. And what I'm going to say right up front before we get into it is, none of them are wrong. Just understand that there are different ways of doing business and people choose to do things differently, which is okay. But just understand what types of business and what they're doing. And we're going to kind of get into to some of those things. But when it comes to nuking and paving, you basically have two schools of thought. A lot of people will say, why are you nuking and paving? You can't remove a virus. You don't know what you're doing. You piece of junk tech. What do you, I mean, you Craigslist tech, whatever. And the reality is that's not always the case of why people actually use a practice of nuking and paving consistently in their business and have been doing it for many, many, many years. Okay. And we're going to kind of get into those things. The other school of thought is, hey, I don't know if the, you know, nuking and paving, that's kind of the way to go as far as making sure I got a clean system. It's got a fresh start. It's ready to rumble and people will be happy with that particular service. And so anyways, what we're going to do is we're going to kind of break down what does nuking and paving mean and what does it actually do, not only for you as a business owner, but also what does it do, good and bad, for the customer? Because here's one thing you will learn in life. There are pros and cons to everything. And if you think there's not, you're wrong. So there are pros and cons to everything that we do in life. It's just the way it is. Some good, some bad. And you have to figure out what's going to work for you best in your business. And we just try to bring you ideas and thoughts on what we think about different ways of doing business. You can take it and run with it, or you can leave it right there on the floor and just step over and keep on moving. So either way. All right. So who wants to start off with the why, or should we nuke and pave?
I don't know. I'll do it.
Go ahead, Joe.
Well, you know, I personally don't do too many nuke and paves anymore. I used to do a lot more when I was new at my business, but, you know, a lot of my business customers, you know, I typically have, you know, after they are a customer, not a brand new one, you know, I'll image very important computers. You know, I'll create image maybe once a month, with backup. But I know what you're talking about. I know some services here in Fort Wayne, Indiana, that you take your computer in, that's what they do. That's how they fix getting rid of the viruses. They'll nuke and pave it, and the customer gets a computer back. Half their software isn't on there, and maybe their data is, maybe their data isn't.
Right.
Because they sign a paper for that.
Yep.
And that's a last resort for me. And typically, what I'll do if I'm working on a computer to remove a virus and I'm about an hour or so into it, and it doesn't look like I'm getting anywhere, maybe I might make that decision to do a nuke and pave. But, you know, that's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just is, you know, reload the operating system and everything else. And for most businesses, they only have maybe a few pieces of software, but home users, residential, they have all kinds of stuff on their computer. Getting all that back, you know.
Well, Jeff, you and I have talked about this before. I've always said, you know, a lot of times you home consultants have it a lot harder than us business guys. It's pretty easy for me when I go into an office and it's all Optiplex 3000 series computers because I already know the drivers I need. I probably have some images built already. You guys, every house you walk into, it's a different Toshiba, Acer, Dell, Lenovo, whatever, Mac, so on and so forth. So it's got to be tough for you guys to have some sort of image ready. So it's probably pretty much always pretty much starting from scratch, I'd have to guess.
Yep.
Yeah, and there's, so I've heard people talk, and we'll let Paco ring in here in a minute. I've heard people talk about that they have an image library, and they'll swear up and down, hey, it's a 10-minute rebuild on this machine. Okay, whatever it is, because they build, what I'm assuming, and I don't know for sure, what they build is they build generic OSs, Windows 7, Windows 7 Pro, so on and so forth. And so when they do that, they've got all the, they build in all the latest driver, not drivers, but they build in all the latest updates and stuff and get as close as they can. So 10-minute process to reload, they're reloading on SSDs a lot of times, and that's fine. But I know personally that even if you get all that stuff done, a lot of times there is the rest of the updates takes time, and there's other things that you're missing because, like Joe was saying, software and such. And what what I will say is, even from a homeowner standpoint or a business standpoint, a lot of us don't realize that when we do a nuke and pave, what we do is we basically are setting that person's productivity back. This is my opinion, and I'm pretty sure it's this way, but you're setting that person's productivity back for about 2 to 3 months on average. Reason I know that is because when I have to reload my system, which is a rarity anymore because it's such a pain, it takes me about 2 and 3 months to get back to my productivity level to get everything set up the way that I like it and use it on a daily basis. Because it's, oh, wait, where did I put that? Oh, I need to move this back over here. So unless you're taking an actual image of that system and putting it back on, which wouldn't make any sense, right? Because you already have something wrong with it. That's not going to help. So that's my standpoint on nuke and paves is I don't think that it's always helpful to the end user, whether home or business. Now, the difference in business, and a lot of people don't realize this, you can have a server, okay? And you can have a workstation that maybe somebody keeps their documents and different things on that particular workstation, okay? This is one way of doing it. Or you could have a server, and on that workstation, it's just a dumb workstation. Actually, all the documents and everything are actually kept on the server side. So when their work machine goes down, that workstation, you can pull offline, throw another one in, they're back up and running because they log into the server through their account, and everything's there. Versus some of these places are just, they're keeping stuff on there, and we come in, we nuke and pave, and they go, hey, where'd this go? Hey, where'd that go? And I've heard other people talk about basically taking pictures of the desktop and putting the icons and stuff back in place. And we're talking a lot of extra work here. So in my opinion, from what I've seen over the past few years anyways, is that predominantly, not always, but predominantly I can get a cleanup done quicker than I can a nuke and pave, as a general rule.
I agree.
So, let me ask you this, then. Let me devil's advocate a little bit. When are the 100% reasons when you need to look like a rabbit? Are there any 100%, no questions asked, you need a nuke and pave?
So here's where I can step in on that and why nuke and pave may be necessary. And it's difficult as a business owner to go through and say, yes, nuke and pave, that's what you want to do. Now, as far as a technician working for someone else on the field, and if you're charging hourly, a lot of the greener techs may not know or may be under the belief if the business owner hasn't trained them or they've brought them on because of the skill set that they have, where some businesses will have, let's say they buy 4-hour blocks or by hourly, and they're expecting to get it done in 2.5 hours and hope that they don't have a warranty job, meaning they get it done, they believe they got the virus off, they leave, and then they didn't clean it all the way for whatever reason and come back. Now, there's the other side of this too, is that you taking, for a lot of us that have been just running scans, you know, if the computer is not brought on into your shop, some people I heard are scanning anywhere between, what was your old scan times, Jeff? Like 8 to 10 hours?
Oh, no, like 12 to 16.
Yeah. So 12 to 16 hours on scan times for those who haven't done the education to go ahead and do it. That's the big issue where nuke and pave may make sense as a price point and being able to ensure to the customer, hey, look, this is a for sure thing. This is what's happening. We're going to back up all your stuff. We're going to put your stuff back on it. And then we're going to go ahead and just get everything back to as best as we can due to not making the bill higher than it is as it is if you're charging hourly, whether on-site or in the office as well. So if you're doing hourly, I can see why that may be a reason to go to it. But also, I believe that a lot of people tend to go to it because of lack of education as well. Now, that's not a bad thing or a good thing. It's just a matter of there are people out there that are teaching how to do virus removals without the need of nuke and pave. But virus removals are not the only reason that somebody may need to do a nuke and pave. And that's another thing that I want to make sure that it's talked about as well. Because I do nuke and paves all the time, but it's not because of virus removals, it's because of dead hard drives. So you have to do So you have to do a nuke and pave. You can't take an image of that drive if the drive is dead.
So what about Nuke and Pave as a form of maintenance? What do you say? You have a user that there's a lot of install, uninstall, and, you know, just over time you get that, you know, all the OSs, even Linux and all that, get the, I don't know, what do I want to call it? Help me out, guys. You know, it's, you just kind of get cruft. That kludgy crust.
Yeah.
Thank
yeah.
you. Yep. Yep. Thank you. Yep. Funky, I haven't showered in a week sort of thing. Yeah. Right.
Now, I will say this.
Is that a legit Nuke and Pave reason? You're going to do the maintenance and get that done, and then I'm going to throw in the SpinRite thing. Do you guys or anybody in the chat or anything like that run this SpinRite product in maintenance mode on the drive? Because, you know, you hear a lot of people preach that, man, that has fixed everything. Boy, my computer's so much faster because I did maintenance mode.
Now, here's the thing. Back in Windows XP days, I would agree with you that, yes, you get that new squeaky clean feeling.
Yep.
I would say from pretty much Windows 7, mature Windows 7 and on, even Windows 8 and Windows 10, in my opinion, the Windows operating system is so good at optimizing on a regular basis that I don't think we have the buildup that we used to have in the past.
Do you think it's that, or do you just think that our equipment and hardware is so much faster?
It could be a combination of both, but either way, you get the same, like I used to redo my systems every 6 months, literally.
Mad.
And I would spend a total of 13 hours getting, because again, I didn't want to be out 2 or 3 months out of productivity sake. I would spend a solid 13 hours getting it back to the way that I wanted it. Now, unless I'm rebuilding or unless I'm building a new machine, yeah, pretty much I don't do that anymore. So it just kind of runs and runs and runs. Now, granted, I do replace my machines every 3 years. I'm a little outside the norm. If I had something that went longer in the tooth than that, then
that's an understatement. Yeah.
I agree with Paco there a little bit. You know, unless, you know, like for me, once in a while you'll get, you know, a system is corrupted a little bit, system files. I had a where I cloned a hard drive was going bad, so I cloned it. There were some errors during the clone. I ignored them to see if I could get it to clone and run. I did get it to clone. After it booted up, you could tell there's still something wrong. I did an in-place upgrade on that. It was a Windows 7 computer to fix those system files that were messed up. I still didn't do a Nuke and Pave on it, and it ran fine.
Hey, but JD's got a suggestion. What about making an image of the machine once you get it set up?
Oh, I've done that. And when I go to need to use it, I just start over.
Is that a viable option for customers?
I do it once in a while. Yep.
All right. So how do you do that, Joe? Do you make like a partition on their drive and put it on there, or are you putting it on removable media?
I'll put on removable media under a folder, and I may keep it for, you know, it all depends. You know, I'll keep maybe for a year, sometimes longer, but I've done it where a brand new computer, it's a business computer. And after I get it all set up, you know, before any data is on it, I'll create an image of it on external media. You know, I will say that I haven't had to go back to use it. It's when you probably don't do it is when you need it.
Yeah, it's like insurance. You buy insurance, you never need the damn insurance.
And here's the big point, too, is that you have two different type of maintenances you got to think about. So you have the business-to-business where you're doing business maintenance for those type of wipe and reloads. Then you have your home users that do that type of maintenance to keep images on that type. So the question is, how much is it worth your time to do that type of maintenance plan? And is it worth it enough for you and worth it enough for the customer to do that type of maintenance where creating images? And then the issue is that, like you just said, what if they had their kid install some new software for a high school or college? You know, they had added AutoCAD or whatever moving forward, and it's in between those times that you're doing the maintenance, you know, so things like that.
I think I'm on the same page with you, Paco. This sounds like maybe something, you know, we hear a lot of guys that do manual maintenance, you know, non-RMM, where they schedule quarterly home visits and something. Maybe this is an add-on. We just get a hard drive sale out of the deal and say, hey, I'm logging in tomorrow. Remember, plug your drive in and, you know, find some inexpensive software that'll do an image for you, Windows backup, and do a window, you know, you could do a full image.
Right. I have a couple of maintenance agreements like that where I go into a business and it's all in there, but I go in about once every 2 months and I create images on the workstations that are in high demand. That way, if something happens, you know, I have everything, you know, you know, of course, the data is still getting backed up somewhere, but I still have an image where I could, if something happens, I could go in, throw another hard drive in, restore it, get the data back, and I'm up and running in, you know, probably less than an hour.
One of the things that I think people don't think about, though, when we're talking about time and expediency from the business side, and we're looking at, so a lot of people will say, hey, it only takes me 10 minutes to reload a system. And while that may be true with modern hardware and such, the reality is, how long does it actually take you to make that live image and actually keep up with it? Downloading the updates, you know, WSUFs, whatever you're using to do that, getting a program, installing it in the program, and keeping up with this on a regular basis, especially if businesses, and I'm talking about, if you're in a shop, it makes perfect sense. You can have an employee that's all they do, or that's part of what they do. But is a lot of us single technicians, it's like, do we actually, are we going to take the time to do that? And are we going to store these images? Does it make sense for us to do that? And here's another thing too, that I think a lot of people don't realize. And this is a gray area, a lot of legalities around it. And I used to do it all the time. So a lot of times back in the day when I would buy a brand new laptop, could be a Gateway, Dell, HP, didn't matter. I would come home and I would wipe the hard drive and reinstall vanilla Microsoft Home or whatever.
I didn't know there was a version called vanilla.
Well, yeah, Windows XP. Anyways, I'm just thinking back in the day, I haven't done that in a long time. Or actually even Windows 7. I would do that with Windows, all the way up through Windows 7. The reality is, the actual version I'm using for that particular machine is actually against the EULA. A lot of people don't realize that. So there could become some sort of legalities when you're talking. Now, from my standpoint, I bought the equipment. It's my equipment. I can put whatever I want on there. If I want to put Linux on there, I wouldn't. But if I wanted to, I could. And so there's other things that I should be able to do to my system. Now, unfortunately, when it comes to software, there's a lot of legalities where they go, yeah, we're not really going to pay attention to this. But if it ever became an issue, it's something that you have to think about. Nothing.
So again, to building images, if you run a shop and you sell your customer a lot of the same line of HP laptop, I mean, let's go back to that DV series. So the DV 3000 or 5000,
right,
along that whole series, the same image would work on that entire series. So if you sold 200 of those or whatever to all these different customers, I think you'd be crazy not to have an image, because if you got good customers, they're obviously going to come back. So, I mean, a lot of that might be just your finger in the air that's saying, boy, I fixed a lot of these Toshibas. It'd be cool to have an image.
Well,
but you're not maintaining.
I think we're talking two different things here a little bit, because what I'm talking about is like, I have the customers that have high demand on certain workstations. What I do is I have them purchase a Kronos imaging software, and then I do, you know, on a regular basis, go in. It, you know, they may do 5 incrementals before they do another full backup, but I have basically an image that could be restored. And you're talking about an image of really like a Toshiba, like the recovery. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm talking about a clean image, meaning I copy this image back. There's no install. It's just the image copy which is 10 or 15 minutes. But then I've already got all the updates, the drivers, everything.
That's what I'm talking
from
about.
From my last image. Okay. Yes.
So more maintenance versus preventative, what Joe's talking about.
Yeah.
Well, and this used to be a much bigger thing back in the Windows 7 days. I mean, with Windows 10, unless you've got some really new hardware where the drivers might not be there, or there might not be a driver that works. I mean, the time savings was when you did an image on a Windows 7 box, you wouldn't have to spend all the time going to find all the updates and find all the drivers. Now with Windows 10, if you build the latest, you know, stick, the recovery image, I mean, you're damn well near there.
Right.
A couple updates and you're done, at least for the basics. I mean, there's always some outline hardware or some other possibilities that you might have. But
so I guess one of the things that I keep hearing, and I don't know exactly how this works, and I probably would like to know if somebody out there is doing this, but I think, because people are not going to make, as far as my understanding, they're not going to make a Toshiba image, a Dell image, an HP image. What they're going to do is they're going to do a Windows XP image, a Windows 7 image, a Windows 7 Pro, a Windows 10, a Windows 10 Pro, they're going to make those images. They're going to be vanilla, like I used to do back in the day. And that's what they're basically going to install on the computers. Now, part of me...
depends. I would say it depends.
Now, apparently, there's people out there that do this all the time. And it's on any machine out there. So, I look at it from that standpoint. I go, is this something that... Because, obviously, if we're going to make Toshiba and Dell and this and that, it's not going to be worth the time and effort of having all those images, you know, in keeping up with them. That's the other big thing. What do you do that? Once a month at least? You know? So, but that's my understanding is there are people out there that's what they're doing is they're building these vanilla images and that's what they're reinstalling on these operating systems. Now, with the digital entitlement with Windows 8 and Windows 10 anymore, it's probably not an issue as long as you have whatever Windows 8 Home, Windows 10 Home, 10 Pro, whatever. Those seem to, from what I've seen, they'll activate pretty much automatically.
So here's my question, right? So for a lot of like just all kinds of big shops that are out there, so the big box stores, the big on-site companies that you can find online and so forth and so on, if the customer doesn't have their recovery media, what is expected of the manufacturer and Windows for technicians to fix it? Is it this is incentive for them because of the EULA to send back to the manufacturer to fix it? Or do they want us to get these medias for them directly? Like, I know that EULA has always been like the question of, hey, you can't use vanilla, you got to use of that particular make or model. The question is, what is their expectation of the technicians to do?
So,
do you know what I mean? Like, what is the standard that we should be following?
Well, here's the thing, though. What a lot of people don't understand. So, and John knows this because we've talked about it before, and John sent me some Dell images. And basically, if you have a Dell, HP, or whatever, and they send you that OEM disc, back in the day when he used to send a disc, it's a circle like this with a hole in it. And that disc basically would, like John said, reload any of these images. Now, it uses one generic key. So it's a Windows 10 generic key. It's a Windows 8 generic, whatever. Okay.
For the manufacturer.
Okay. Well, actually I should say Windows 7 and before was definitely that. But what you would find on Windows 7 and below was you would find a COA sticker on the bottom of the laptop or the side of the desktop. That COA number was actually that key was different than the OEM version they used. So you could, and this is what I never understood about their EULA was really wonky. You could take a vanilla image and put it on that machine, load it up, use that COA, call into Microsoft. Hey, this is the only one that's on. This is the only machine it's on. Load it up or do the automated, whatever.
Right.
And they will activate that machine. Well, now with the digital entitlement, we're going to it's going to be a little bit different. Now, from my standpoint, I see when I go to do a Windows 10 machine, let's just say, I see something's wonky with the system. I did it to my Intel Nook just because it broke something in there that there basically was no fix for. There's nothing on there. I use this for taking my Skype calls and different things. So I basically went in and did a reset on the system. It downloaded the software from the Microsoft site. It reloaded it up. It was done in like 15 minutes. Now this is downloading everything. Now I have a fast connection, so that made sense, but it was fast. And I didn't need to download the media. I didn't need to plug in a USB key. I didn't need to do anything. So from that standpoint, but there was nothing on there that I needed that I couldn't load later. You know, like little programs here and there that I might use. So from that standpoint, that worked. But I don't know what the difference is nowadays. And I would probably say that it seems like there's not a huge difference between vanilla and because Microsoft is making all these OSs readily available. They're giving you the software to download, put on a USB key, burn to a disk, and actually use. But now there's a lot of things you got to build into, again, the updates and time and all that kind of stuff. So I don't have an exact answer for what you're asking, Paco, but that's just kind of my thought process behind
it.
Just
something to think about where someone in does know, they can write in. But
yeah.
I'm just curious on what is the expectation of Microsoft and what is the expectation of the manufacturers if we can't use the vanilla operating systems and so forth that we've been doing before, how should we acquire the media that they want us to?
So here's the thing. So when you start up a brand new computer, there's a little prompt that comes up that everybody just closes out that says, make a backup of your disks right now.
Never heard of it.
Shove a disk in after the other and just let it write. And it, you do that right from the get-go. Nobody does that, right? And so a lot of times you can always call the manufacturer, and sometimes you can get the media for free. It's not a big deal. Other times they want to charge you $30, whatever it is. And so there are ways to get it. But again, I'm not going to get a, I'm not going to order a Dell OEM disk and try to use it on an HP because it's not going to work. Right.
Well, even then, there's the other, there's like HP, like a perfect example. Sometimes the recovery disk that you order for a particular line may not work for the next line of the same Pavilion series or whatever.
Right.
You know, or it, the ones before that.
John, Dell's been doing this for a while. I remember Dell back in the day would build a lot of things into their disk as far as even their third party software and stuff. It seems like nowadays, when you actually take a Dell OEM disk and load it up, I have to go in and find, now this was with Windows 7, I know for sure. I have to go in and find a, what do you call it? A NIC driver just to get online. You know,
well, I don't have any experience with any of the consumer line, meaning XPS and all that. So I don't know what comes on those. But with the Optiplex and Latitude series, the recovery disks for 7, 8, and 10 are just raw Windows 7.
Correct.
There are no specific Dell anything.
And that was my point. Back in the day, they used to put a lot of that stuff together, and then they started separating that out. And I think Dell, even for a while, HP and whatever, they were actually having a separate disk with drivers and different things in them. But I think it got to the point where it wasn't worth keeping up with all that stuff. So now it's just, like you said, it's basically a vanilla OEM disk that they're giving you.
Yeah, I buy a lot of HP Pro books and Elite books. Mm. And a lot of their software that they provide, it'll be on the disk, all the different models that it'll work with, you know, not just one model. It might be five or six models that it'll work with.
Yeah, the Noble does the same thing.
Yeah.
So going back to, and this is, so I don't really, doing it the way I do it, I don't want to maintain a library. I don't. So for me, if I can get a cleanup on a computer done in less than an hour, as a general rule. Now that's the cleanup. Now, a lot of people don't think about, okay, third-party software, never been updated, is a generic rule, for especially for residentials. Windows, yeah, it's never up to date. You gotta update that. You gotta update your third-party software. You might even be getting rid of a few things here and there if your software that you're using doesn't get rid of those automatically. Because in a lot of times, you even have to take the time and look at it and go, hey, I don't know if they're using Coolio 2000. I got to look it up. I don't even know what it is. What does it do? Or zip file 764, whatever. And so you look these things up and you go, I don't think they're using it. So let me just get rid of it. And then they go, hey, what happened to? So there is other times built into the stuff that we do.
You know, not to change the subject, but is, you know, has anybody had any problems with the digital entitlement? Like with Windows 10, I've heard that, you know, that after it's been activated and you do have to do a nuke and pave for somebody, maybe a total reload, it's not reactivating. Has anybody run across that? I haven't, but I've listened to some podcasts that they're saying that they have had some problems.
I've had one problem on one machine.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't had that.
I haven't had any issues with
it. How
did
you get it to activate, John?
I did not. We fought with HP and everything, and finally we just bought, it was a home PC, I think it was an HP Pavilion, and finally we just bought another copy of Windows 10 home. He just got tired of fighting.
Yeah, I heard customer. Microsoft's terrible about it, you know, trying to get it to, you know, before when you could call in and, you know, put the product key in or whatever. Now they're really tough on that.
I'll take that back. I used to have a Surface, not a Surface Pro, but just on my little Surface 3. Those come with Windows 10 Home, so I purchased the 10 Pro upgrade for it. And then I decided to do a wipe, and when I did the wipe, even though I told it to put 10 Pro back on it, it only put 10 Home on it. Hmm. And I had to call, because I bought the update through the Windows Store.
Mm.
It still wasn't linked in. And I mean, I had a fight with Microsoft to get that back to Windows 10 Pro.
Wow.
Wow.
Even though the purchase was listed in my Microsoft account.
Unbelievable.
Nobody could figure out, it wasn't just as easy as, oh, okay, Mr. Dubinsky, let us log in and type a key in for you. It was probably at least an hour of phone time, just, begging.
That's bad.
Yeah, the only time I've ever had any issues with activating that had digital entitlement was any of the ones that had like HP, Dell, whatever. I would reinstall whatever the native operating system was on it, and then I would upgrade it back again. The same process, but just that I reinstalled, reinstalling Windows 10, and it would pick up the digital entitlement and just activate. That was the other way I was able to do it as well.
Okay. Yeah, I've yet to run into that problem, even on machines that have really been borked, for a better or lack of better terms. And I just look at it and go, hey, is there anything on here? And they're like, no.
Yeah.
And I just go, okay. I just go into hold shift, restart, go in there, reset, boom, done. Now, so from that standpoint, go ahead, John.
Well, if that's going to happen, it's going to happen to me too soon, because back when the deadline for Windows 10 free update came, I mean, I ran around and I probably did 200 computers.
Okay.
Windows 10, and then rolled them back.
So, oh, okay.
Because the whatever management software or whatever software they're using was not compatible. Now it is. Now the time is coming for me to retry to.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Yep.
So, I'm. So I don't make it to a show. It's supposed to work. That's why. Yeah, it's supposed to.
Yeah.
Yeah, report back, John, and let us know once you start that process.
Or we'll just have to wait.
Probably lose all my hair from that.
So, again, let's go back to, and wind us off here, let's go back to different types of business. Now, there's a lot of people that do nuke and paves because it's easy. They can get it done in their minds fairly quickly. The making of the software is not that big a deal to them. It's a process they have put in place. In my opinion, these are what I would call churn and burn. In other words, if you don't know, or if the customer doesn't know that you're causing them pain, it doesn't mean that they're not in pain. Okay. So you have to look at it from a standpoint of, yes, if you absolutely, in my opinion, if you absolutely have to do it, here's what we got to do and we got to start over. I am sorry, but this is going to give you the best process and the best bang for the buck. But if I can avoid it, I'm literally stopping you from having 2 to 3 months of pain in order to set your computer back up to the way that you like to use it. Now, for some people, maybe they don't care. But I mean, the reality is, man, if you move an icon 2 slots to the right, people are like, where'd my icon go? They're nuts. So
thing is,
go ahead, Joe.
Well, one of the nice things, now that we have Fabs Auto Backup.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, most customers, when you redo their computer, they're just amazed that their background's the same, their icons are still there. Like you said, they may not be in the same spot.
Right.
But they are there.
Yes.
But you're right. Some customers, oh my gosh, it's like, this isn't right the way it was. But, Fabs, you can get it pretty doggone close.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I sort the damn things just for pleasure.
It's funny that you were saying that before with Fabs as well. Before yesterday, I had a client that she bought a new HP, swapped everything out, ran Fabs, threw it on there. She thought I was still on her old laptop.
Yeah.
And so she's like, well, when are you? You've been here a long time. When are you going to take care of the new laptop? Man, this is your new laptop. Wait, what? And she looked at it and she was like, well, how, and it was just like, I guess how quick it was in that case. Why, because at first it was too long on the old one, but now when she realized the new one was already set up and good to go, she's like, well, how did you do that so fast and why is all my old stuff there, but like, she was just shocked that I was able to do it. So it's just a great tool.
And I'll say, if you're going to, in my opinion, if you can learn how to basically clean up a computer, which I believe you can do 90%+ of the time, and do it well and not worry about, I've never had, when I do a cleanup, I don't worry about it coming back reinfected. I just don't get those. Now, maybe there's businesses out there that do, and And again, if somebody's going to some nefarious website, but most of the people that I deal with are just, they're general users. They might go to a website if they maybe got caught up in a drive-by or something that they downloaded one piece of software and it added 10 other pieces of software. But the reality is, when we're talking about nuking and paving, we're talking about viruses. There's really not a whole lot of viruses out there anymore. It's pretty much malware, which is just going to be some of your stuff that's cumbersome, bothersome, but not necessarily nefarious other than it really gums the system up. So those are fairly easy to clean. And even if you do have a Trojan here or there, they can only operate from so many places in the system anyway. So if you know where to look, you can figure out whether you got them all or not. And that's just, again, it's a learning process. So once you learn that, you go on from there. But yes, there are times when you need to nuke and pave. I just think for me, it's went from where I used to nuke and pave all the time to it has to be an extreme situation before I'll actually do that.
Me too. How about crypto lockers, the ransomware? Is people, have you been nuke and paving when you get one of those, or are you just removing it?
Just, you can remove it.
Yep.
Those crypto viruses are actually probably some of the easiest to get rid of. They literally are.
How about everybody else? Are you doing any nuke and paves with those, or just removing them? And
no, I think when they first started coming out, everybody just didn't know what was going on.
So removing,
removing. Right. So, and then after we've, you know, kind of understood what's going on, what it's doing, then, you know, it's kind of got it, you know, taken care of from there. But, you know, and going back to what Jeff was saying too, I mean, exactly what you just said, Joe, with the crypto, with just educating yourself in general, with ransomware, malware, junkware, et cetera, you know, we're going into the holidays, we're getting into some downtime. I challenge a lot of our listeners here to actually go and invest in some education. I mean, Ken Dwight has a lot of great courses. He just released a mini course for that same topic, ransomware. And then you can also go into the bigger course to understand how to effectively remove malware, you know, and that's one of those where I have yet to attend the main course. I know that I did one of his free courses back when, and even doing that helped me a lot more than what I was doing before. So that's just something you want to take a look at. You're going to have some downtime. The holidays normally are if you don't have a shop. And I just challenge you guys to, you know, start educating yourself a little bit more and just get that skill set. It's just something to add on and a good reason to raise your rates in the new year.
Very good.
Downtime. I think all my customers think I'm don't celebrate Christmas or Thanksgiving.
Oh, but I thought you were up.
Because they would really like to, I was a what? Save that for after the show conversation.
Okay. Well,
yeah, I remember the last time they figured I had just come in after over Christmas break, and I said, no, I'll be, smoking the Hanukkah at the same time too, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. I'm out. Any closing thoughts before we move on? Anyone?
Good on my own.
So what did we resolve, really? That nuke and pave, it's a tool. Just
it
like
is
any
a tool.
Other tool in our tool set?
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
I think really the synopsis is there are different tools for different jobs. Just don't think that you have to rely on one tool for every situation. And it's really that goes throughout this business. Everything that we do, you're going to find the best tools that work for you. Use those in any given situations, however you build your business, whatever works for you, and just keep with that. And then, but don't be afraid, like Paco said, though, don't be afraid to learn. You can still learn after 30 years, 40 years, 50 years. You can always learn. So learn, understand, get a better understanding. So at least you go, hey, this is what I do because it works for me. Don't know why.
Right to your point, Jeff. In the chat room, we're talking about tools right now, and somebody's building some of their ISOs and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, they're going through their ISO or their tools list and all that, you know, and all of our lists are nice and long because there's no tool that does it all.
Right.
I mean, I think we all kind of have this small fantasy where UVK or Windows Repair Tool or, you know, our buddies over at Tech Suite would just solve all our problems for us. But then anybody can do this, right?
That's right. Yeah. Well, so pretty much anybody does do this, but yeah. Anyways.
Obviously.
I mean, look at me. I just play a tech on TV. That's all I do.
You've been saying that a lot more lately.
Well, let's be honest. That's the cool thing about, you know, this community and all the guys in the chat and all that, that, you know, we can all ask stupid questions and
absolutely. You know what?
Get the ribbon and then get some good answers.
There are stupid questions. Literally. Hey, if you've been doing something that works for you and you want to tell people about it, or you want some insight, I'm going to give you my opinion. But again, it's just that. This is not Fox News. It's not MSNBC. This is just my opinion. You can either take it or leave it.
Talking in it.
All right.
And you can get what you pay for around here.
That's right.
Oh, I'm not muted. Oh, no.
Okay, so let's move on to we're going to move on to our call in section.
Good one, Perry.
So if you want to call in, the number is 1-888-697-0162. Let us know what you do, or let us know maybe something we didn't discuss or think about. But let's go into some emails before we go there. All right. This is from Chandler Calvert. All right. He owns a business down south somewhere. I can't remember. I think in Georgia. Says, okay, so I'm taking a note on a new business client possibly and would be the biggest project for me I've done. I'm a little unsure about the decisions for hardware and software I make, so I want your opinion. My client has a sign shop, and his computer is an HP with a 1 terabyte drive that is 100% maxed out and no backups. I'm wanting to set him up with a new system. I'm torn between a Lenovo machine upgraded or a custom machine. I'm thinking about doing a system from Lenovo with the specs in the attachment below, basically Core i7 6700, 16 gigs of RAM, 256 gig solid state drive, yada, 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 so on and so forth, right? About $1,000. Okay. Actually, about $900. I just saw a discount there. Okay. Said he goes, I could also do a custom system and tailor a little more. I'm an authorized Lenovo partner as of today. His current backup solution is versions of consumer grade 1 terabyte external hard drives thrown everywhere, which I consider to be zero backups. Which brings me to a backup solution. I was thinking maybe doing a Synology NAS for all his client files, using Acronis to image his SSD boot drive to the NAS. I'm also putting on an AV and monitoring his system via Kabuto and instant house call monthly for Windows updates, backups, etc. Do you think I'm taking the right approach? What would you do differently? I'm trying to properly set him up on the first go around to make sure he has at least the least amount of downtime possible for the event of a failure, and also has a great computer.
Well, a couple of things. I'll start this one out. First of all, I'd look at the requirements of whatever he's using to do his signs. Sometimes, you know, a lot of those sign programs, I remember when I used to have a couple of customers, they're almost like some light CAD programs, meaning you might want to look at the type of video card that's in there. You might want to go with, we just talked about these, a Quadro series card from NVIDIA or something that is really meant to do the kind of drawing or CAD drawing or sign work there. Probably, if this is just a guy, one single computer, I might not discount Carbonite as an option for the backup, just because it's, you know, one computer, $60 a year, or was it $100 a year, Jeff, for the external hard drive? So you've got an image backup and restore. You've got a set it and forget it backup that he'll never have to worry about. So, you know, that's super easy. And it sounds like he's the kind of guy that probably doesn't back up his stuff religiously. So you might not want to have something that's not really easy to monitor. You know, Acronis is pretty easy. But and the other thing I might look at, you know, if it's a business class machine, I don't know what Lenovo has. Maybe you can help me, Paco. But like behind me, I've got a Dell Precision, which is sort of a workstation type computer built for CAD CAM. So that might be something to look at.
Yeah, he's probably going to think about the ThinkStations are kind of probably be the ones that he's want to focus. So the ThinkStations are going to be similar to the Precisions in that line.
I'm just thinking if it's from what he's explaining, like what the customer had probably with their knowledge, you just want to keep the solution. What's it? What is it? The KISS principle?
Right.
You know, as easy as possible.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I was going to go into. Because so did he say that he was looking at keeping the computer that the client was on and upgrading it, or purchasing a Lenovo and or custom machine? Or was it just simply the Lenovo and the custom machine?
Just a Lenovo and a custom machine. Yeah. Okay. No keeping the old computer. So
okay, got it. So he's got to take into two things in consideration. And this is a constant argument that I have with a buddy of mine as well, where he thinks custom rules the world. And for me, it's whatever floats the boat of the client. Now, one thing to take in consideration is the specs, just like what John had said. But the one thing I want to make sure that he thinks of as well is, are you going to make more money on the Lenovo with your services versus the time you're going to spend on building the custom machine? So that's one. Because if you can get the same components that you would get on that Lenovo and with your services, if it's worth it to you to make that extra money on the time invested, cool, go for the custom machine. But the other thing I want to bring into that as well is, you know, if you're giving all these offers and trying to make it as simple as possible for the customer, you might want to look at doing the Lenovo and then selling him a 3-year warranty. Because then if you're out of pocket, they give a call or he calls you, you give a call to Lenovo within 24 hours, they show up, they'll replace or fix whatever the problem is going to be. So a lot of OEMs have this type of warranty anyway. So that's going to be something you might want to think about. Is that worth your time as you're providing all these other solutions, such as, you know, Carbonite, Synology, whatever backup platform you're deciding to go. But if it's between the two, for me, building custom machines are not worth my time. So I would just stick with the Lenovo, sell the warranty, and just whatever services I can upsell. That would be a good profit for me, at least how I would see it.
I'm in the same boat there with the custom machine. Unless it's some specific need that only custom would fulfill, I'm with you.
Joe?
Well, I agree with everybody. I'm a little different on the custom machine, though. If I have the time, I will quote a custom machine. Because I add a specific amount to the custom price. They want to go with it, they will. If they don't, they don't. But I'm a firm believer in the custom computers. I think they are so much better, trouble-free. And I will add extended warranty on. I'll say, you know, for this much money, you know, you can get a 3-year extended warranty, parts and labor included. I don't think I've ever had one come back. And I've probably built hundreds of custom computers. But I don't, depends how busy I am. Like Paco just said, you know, if I'm busy as heck, I don't have the time. I'm looking at a Dell Optiplexes or the HP Desk Pros or the Lenovo Business Class. I very seldom ever buy anything but business class computers for anybody, if it's even residential.
I think you made a good point there, and this is probably something we could talk about on another show, is warranties that we offer.
Yep.
You know, and I assume when you say extended warranties, you're covering whatever goes wrong with it, right?
That's exactly right. Yep.
I think that's interesting.
And I agree with that 100%. And to carry on that warranty conversation, I'm not going to argue with you on the quality or feature set of a custom machine. Mm-hmm. Because I think, well, Jeff, you and I just ran into this working with this precision. So obviously, in any corporate machine you get, even though you might have a main board in there with the chipset that a custom machine might have, the manufacturer is going to dumb down that BIOS. So there's only so many things you can select and only so many much magic you can do that for two reasons. One, the corporate help desk, me, doesn't want to get support calls and Dell doesn't want to get support calls on all those options. So if you build a custom machine, you know, I think it opens a lot of customization for you to do as the supplier of that machine. Plus, I think you can add more quality components in there. I mean, there's no argument that even in this precision, the power supply that comes in that is junk compared to baseline Corsair or whatever, any quality brand of power supply. I'm not arguing that at all. But, you know, if you've got 500 endpoints that you've got to manage out there, and you could toss 3-year warranty on these, and all they're really doing is business class apps, and I can call Dell and just say, hey, the power supply is dead, go fix it, and I don't need to be there, and the customer's open 9 to 5, you know, that's where that management comes in. My argument, I agree with you 100%, Joe, is definitely not with the quality of the box. Although we've all seen some pretty cheap white boxes in our day.
Sure.
But
I've seen some cheap gaming computers.
If you put quality parts in, what's that?
Yeah, if you're building a quality white box, there's no comparison. And I think you're probably right. If you have the time to build, you probably won't see them back.
Right. No, I've seen some boutiques come out with pieces of junk, not quality builds that somebody paid a couple $1,000s for. And I'm like, going, you know what I could have built for $2,000? Oh, you'd be in the top 10% on NVIDIA, man. Anyways.
Again, I think it goes back to Nuke and Pave. They're tools. What yep. best fits the customer need? What fits your business profile? And, you know, what are they doing?
And with Chandler's question, he's kind of asking, you know, what exact brand? You know, I personally, I don't know about you guys, you know, I like the Dells. I like the business class HPs. You know, I like the business class Lenovos. I've had good luck with all three of them. How about you guys? I mean, I don't have a preference.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly like you said, it's preference. I mean, I think it was whatever we're more comfortable with, whatever we've used more of. I think John can say, exactly why he picked what it is. I think it's just a matter of whatever you're used to and want to stick with. You want to just make it simple for yourself. But yeah, I've had the same experience like you have, Joe, where all of the business classes I've had no problems with.
I'm probably with Dell just so that I could be the master of one.
Right.
So I know everything about the one.
Yeah.
We used to be, believe it or not, back in the day, a huge Acer reseller until they changed their program. And they actually had some nice stuff back in the day with their TravelMate series and even in the desktops. Actually, I just replaced my last set of Acers that were probably 10 years old and still running. So, I don't really have any problem with any of the corporate line of any of those products, Lenovo, HP, or Dell, for that matter.
No.
I just chose one. Now, to be honest with you, it's a lot easier to do business with HP than it is to do business with Dell.
Okay.
Oh, geez, yeah. Because you can source your product from a lot more places, and in my opinion, with the HP product than you can the Dell product. Not to mention, like, even if you're a Dell partner and you go to their darn site, it's not a very enjoyable.
It is not. Yeah, I agree with you 100%.
I mean, even on the consumer side, I mean, aren't they trying to sell the computers? Don't get me started. Maybe that's another show.
Yeah. Not to drive you crazy.
I sent him an email basically was saying some of the same things that you guys had already said. So here's the follow-up email I got to that original. It said, I actually ended up going with a custom build for the client. The client put off the NAS for a few months and said he will purchase the NAS from me at that time. Currently, I'm using Backblaze for backups, but I'm doing more research on the best backups for NAS until then. Okay, again, are there any best products out there? No, there's not. I don't care if you're married to one. It's not the best product. It is a product. I still do plan to start selling Lenovo to most clients, though. This guy just ended up wanting a custom build. I plan on keeping up with the warranties, and if I end up regretting it, it will be just a lesson learned. I think there's no problem with that.
Can't argue with that.
I ended up putting a 250 gigabyte SSD for the boot drive and a 1 terabyte Western Digital Red to back up the Acronis images to. Now, that's probably on board, which I do the same thing, but I also have a minimum of 4 backups. So right now, the client is backing up to consumer-grade external drives, and that's not good, but he didn't want to blow a huge amount of money at one time, which I understand. But I like what you said, John. You could get for $100, you could get a 2 terabyte Western Digital book or whatever external drive, right? You even get a 4 terabyte if you wanted. Throw it on a desktop, plug it in, get Carbonite, do a cloud backup, $100 a year, and it'll also do a daily image of that machine. Something happens, you pop the hard drive out, put a new hard drive in, reload that image. Then you don't have to mess with Acronis. You don't have to do everything separately. Everything's kind of built right in. So that is an option, and it's cheap enough for probably what he's doing. Is it now, does that mean if you need to get your data back and let's say the image goes bad and your computer goes bad and all you have is your backup and it's got gigs, even terabytes of information, it might take a little while to get that stuff back. So just understand that that's going to be one of the pain points of using something like that.
Let me ask you something. You're talking about Carbonite. It makes me a little nervous. They're versioning. How far do they only keep their versions for 30 days, don't they, for versioning? Yeah, see, I don't like that. See, I use Infrascale, and it's unlimited. If they get hit with a CryptoLock virus.
Definitely a consideration, yeah. You bet.
You know, you pay more for it, but at least you have the backup.
And that's the rub, right? Because we have the best solutions out there. You could use a Datto, You could do a bare metal restore. You could have all this stuff in place. The problem is a lot of these customers are like, oh, I'm not paying for that. So it's like, do we get them nothing? Which I think in most case scenarios, by the time somebody's got hit with a crypto locker, they pretty much know it. So you got 30 days to freeze the account, go back, get the data, all that kind of stuff. So I think it's still doable and it's still better than nothing. But what's happening is a lot of people that are not willing to pay for the higher end stuff are just going, eh. Yeah. They'll roll the dice.
It's more costly.
Yeah. Yep. So I agree with you.
Backblaze, what's Backblaze's retention?
I'm not sure. Anybody know?
I'm not sure. I don't use Backblaze.
I think they're fairly reasonable when it comes to pricing, you know.
They're all about the same as far as pricing from what I've looked at. And you're looking at anywhere. I think if you go to the business side, even with a Carbonite, it's a 60-day retention. Residential side is going to be 30. And I think that's pretty much what I've seen throughout the industry so far, unless you get into the higher-end stuff, which you can do.
The only reason I would bring up the Carbonite for that customer is just based on the description of what's going on. I like the Carbonite option just because Carbonite auto-updates itself. When there's a problem, there's a big blinking red icon.
Right.
You know, I'm just thinking of
ease.
Dummy proofing, user proofing,
I know Marvin, when he was talking on a show probably a couple months back, he was saying that there are customers that actually did need 6-month retention and maybe even up to a year, and that's why he converted them over to a data box. But the reality is, it was one. So the reality is, for most of the small business stuff, do you need that? It's the best.
Well, for me, yes. For a lot of my medical compliance, I have to have 7 years.
Right. Yeah, that's right. You need to meet FINRA compliance and all that. Yep. You need a backup that fits that.
7.
Yeah. So now, John, how do you do that with, because I know you use Carbonite for a lot of your businesses. What do you use outside of that? As far as keeping 7 years of that data?
No Carbonite anymore. Yep. I'm using all Barracuda and Tronus.
Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha. All right. Let's see. Let's move on to the next email. Hopefully that helps you out, Chandler. Just some things to think about. And you learn as you go. So you learn what's going to work for you right now, and you grow. Keep trying to push that stuff. As long as you constantly have a plan in place, you're at least moving forward. You're not just going, hey, we're not going to deal with this ever. We're just going to let you throw these 1 terabyte external drives all over your desk. All right. So this will probably be our last email for the day. It says, hey, Jeff, love the show. I've actually been on Podnuts Daily and a computer repair podcast a couple of times in the past. Been out of the loop for a few months, but I'm catching up on back episodes now. I've been presented with the opportunity and wanted to maybe get some words of wisdom from guys who are older and seen more of the world than I have. Ouch. Here's a brief rundown of my situation, except for Paco. I'm 27, been in IT since I started college 6 years ago. For the past 4 years, I've been working for a local IT contractor computer repair business. I started as a basic bench tech and have moved through the ranks into my current position as IT manager and primarily a primary consultant for all three of our branches. It's a fairly small company, only about 25 employees. Over the past year, I've started to feel a little claustrophobic as far as where I can move up from here. I'm definitely set on making my way up the IT ladder, but I'm afraid my current company doesn't offer or afford any more upwards movements. My company has been nothing but great to me, but I believe I've hit the ceiling as far as compensation and resume building. I recently was offered a comfortable position as a sysadmin with a regional, very large MSP cloud solutions company, but I'm on the fence about going from the small business to a more corporate environment. Pay is a little more, but with full benefits, which is certainly welcome. I almost feel like I'm selling my soul to the devil. I like my current employer and team, but at my age, I don't know if it's wise to settle so quickly. Okay, Jeff, give it to me straight. Am I young enough to work my way up the ladder without regretting it, or do I stick it out with my current company and try to grow it as aggressively as I can? Any advice would be greatly appreciated. Not many IT pros around the area, so I'm counting on you guys. Anonymous. For specific reasons. So when I sent him an email back and basically told him, you can do either or. I said, there's pros and cons to everything. I don't know that if you've moved up and you're an IT manager, I don't know that your responsibilities are going to be slightly different going from IT manager to sysadmin, but really it's a different environment. I said, you probably have a little more freedom where you're at right now. I said, in my opinion, the next step up would be business owner or partner of some sort, because the reality is, and correct me if I'm wrong, for anybody that knows corporate IT better than I do, I hear people in the industry. So sysadmin, that's pretty much, unless you're going to do something specific, writing code, doing other things, sysadmin is pretty much going to be the top of the ladder in any type of the corporate situation. And I can't tell you over the years how many people that I've known that have actually lost their jobs because of budget cuts or for whatever reason, because they usually cut the fat from the top and keep the younger bucks to kind of clean up the mess. So what they'll do is they'll pull in a couple people for half the price that they were paying that sysadmin and just replace them and get twice the amount of work for cheaper usually. So there's those things to look at. I don't know how much, if you did move companies, I don't know how much higher you would go in the chain.
I mean, do you want to work for yourself or work for somebody else is the first question.
Right.
Right.
And the other piece too is that do you like doing the work or are you not okay with management? So that's kind of where you're at right now. Because if he's an IT manager, like that's what happened to me. Not for as far as tech wise, but when I was at my last company, I was the help desk manager and hated it. Hated being management. But I love being able to do the data integrations, the database and workings and schedule jobs, stuff like that. So it proved to me that I was a better worker than I was as a manager.
Right.
So that's what's something that he wants to think about going up in corporate America. So once he makes that decision, that should give him a better idea of what he wants to do, whether he wants to leave the company or not. If he's okay with management, then I would stick it out and see what he's going on. But like you said, there's no 30 years and you get a gold watch anymore. I mean, that's just, those days are gone.
He's a manager right now.
No, I know. But right. I'm saying like, okay. If he wants to stick it out, you know, understand that there isn't the 30 years right. And get the gold watch anymore. I mean, I had my previous boss in my current job that I had that they let him go. And he was doing the best that he could do and he was all for it. And they just let him go because exactly like that, they cut from the top.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's just something to take into consideration. If you love doing the work and this is admin just seems like it's better people or whatever is a better opportunity, you might want to go for that. But I do agree with Jeff that, you know, next step up, if you really are looking for the accolades, the titles, the, you know, business owner would be the next one on top of that. If you're going to want to keep going up.
John?
I agree with John a little bit there. You know that, you know, it depends if he wants to go out on his own, because if he goes out on his own right now, he's working for somebody, he leaves, he's done. You own your own business. You can work 7 days a week, 24 hours a day.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah. And if you don't kill it, you're not eating it. That's right.
That's right. Yeah. And also you need insurance, you need all that other stuff. So, you know, you need to think it through before you leave. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And also a business environment, you know, again, corporate can be really, really weird versus a lot of times I think with the smaller businesses, things are a little more, I don't want to say fancy free, but they're a little more loose than being so tight. And this is what you're doing, and we don't really care about your ideas. Just make this happen, type thing. Versus what you're doing now, where you're just kind of you're running the show, and you're making sure that things happen, and you're able to do that kind of at your own pace.
You guys ever seen on YouTube? And I'll put this in the show links. I kind of picture it as the IT guy, and it's the corporate boss, the sales manager, and then like the IT guy, and they're at a customer place, and the customer, it's called the expert, and the customer wants 7 red lines. All right. But then the customer explains that we want 7 straight red lines, but you have to draw 3 of them in blue and 2 of them in green. And then 2 or 3 of them have to have no color or something like that. I'll put that in the show notes. But, you know, that's what you got to deal with in the corporate world.
Yeah.
You know, if you're your own boss, you know, you are the expert, so you can say yes and no. But, you know, just the guy's look on that guy's face is probably half how I feel half the time, you know, during the day.
What? Oh, man. All right. Let's see. So hopefully that helps you out, Mr. Anonymous. And anyways, let me give a last thing that this came up a few months back. And this was an email. It says, hey, Jeff, here's the answer to deleting files with name pads that are too long. And I'll put the link in the show notes. The quick answer is if you are in Explorer at the right path, just write in or type in SUBST space J colon in the address bar and press enter. A command window will pop up, execute the command and close again. There you go. A new drive pops open in Explorer. Then you can go to the drive letter J in this case and delete the files. When you're done, type SUBST space forward slash D space J colon in the address bar, and it will delete the J drive. Or from what I read in the article, you can just restart your machine and it'll bring everything back to normal. So that is something we came up with a few months back. I was having a problem actually deleting something that was in the internet cache with a file name that was too long. Wouldn't let me do it. And this was from Adam Carpenter, IT Professionals of Iowa. Thank you, Adam. Appreciate that tip. And we will definitely get that in the show notes. All right. I think we have had a full show. So, Joe, appreciate you coming out. And if people want to find out more about what you're up to, where could they go?
Well, you could contact me, email joe@cyberonsiteservices. I'm on Facebook. I have a business Facebook account. Just look up Cyber Onsite Services. And I also have a personal, if you want to look up Joe Kanazovich, and if you can figure out how to spell it, but that's about it.
It'll be in the show notes. So
I do have a website.
Paco, where can people find out more about what you're up to besides being on this podcast and other podcasts? And you just apparently have nothing better to do. You're working so much, you just want to make yourself sick. But anyways, go ahead and let us know people can find you at.
So specifically, you can find me in 3 places, and this is time sensitive for one of these places. First place, if anyone actually wants to talk tech, meet me up. I'm actually holding a, with the nonprofit board that I'm on, holding a fundraiser this Friday on the 11th. You can head over to Eventbrite. It's in West Loop of Chicago. ACE is the nonprofit that I'm with, HACE, our 4th annual masquerade ball. So if you want to see me over there, talk tech, I'll be ready there, and feel free to go ahead and talk to me there. Other 2 places, obviously I'm going to be right here starting as of today, weekly on the live show, or you can always meet me over at the YFNCG network for the Computer Business Podcast with my other good, great, esteemed co-host, Matthew Rodella, as we take on a lot of computer business specific topics and try and help listeners on both environments and communities get better at their craft.
Awesome. Well, glad to have you today, and welcome to the club. And also joining us, we have, thank you, John. And where can people find you at?
Mavengroup.net.
John, so just here's where I'm at. Well, all your information's there. So great. Appreciate every one of you coming on and sharing with us today. Y'all can come join us live for the Computer Repair Podcast every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern over at podnets.com/Computer Repair Podcast Live. You can join in on the conversation by calling in live or hanging out in the chat room. We have audio available over at podnets.com or subscribe using your favorite podcatcher. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, Computer Repair Podcast. Send your questions and feedback to podnuts@podnuts.com. Doesn't get any simpler than that, folks. Leave a voicemail at 1-888-697-0162. And please consider supporting this show by going to patreon.com/computer repair podcast. I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts, the Computer Repair Podcast.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.